For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everyone. This week is the Haftorah for Parshas Bo. What's interesting is that the message in this week's Haftorah is not drastically different from last week's, which is the downfall of Egypt. In the Torah, Hashem could have just said, all right, we're slaves, time to take you out, let's go. That's not what happened. It was a long re-education, so to speak, with the plagues. And we're used to thinking that the whole idea was to punish the Egyptians. It doesn't take so long to punish the Egyptians. There were many lessons involved in the giving of the plagues. There were many, the people had things to learn, and they had to learn how things worked and what happened. And so in the Haftorah also, in a certain way, this message that Egypt, which was the major superpower, would be destroyed, that was a message of what they did wrong and what they what their fate would be. That spans 2 weeks. So the only big difference is last week was Ezekiel, Yechezkel, and this week is Jeremiah. So it's two different prophets totally. But it's a similar message. They have a different style. Every prophet has a different style. Just like Jeremiah, I think, was later, because he was there during the destruction, Jeremiah. And Yechezkel was a little bit earlier, I believe. Okay. So let's begin on page 1151. Hadavar Asher Diber Hashem El Yirmiyahu. This is the message that Hashem said to Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah Hanavi. Lavo, Nebuchadnezzar Belech Bavo, that the... sometimes you wonder why different countries do different things. I remember during the Gulf War when the U.S. led a mission against Iraq. Iraq was the worst enemy of the Jews at that time. Saddam Hussein was sending missiles to Israel, Scud missiles. And here we had other countries taking care of him for us, you know, that it was very nice. Even now, there's a big war going on in Syria. Syria had chemical weapons that they wanted to use against the Jewish people. That's what they created them for. And they ended up using them against each other. So even though you feel bad for the Syrians, but ultimately the different nations are a tool in Hashem's hand. They're all created to do. So here also, like Nebuchadnezzar, who was no friend of ours, he was the one who would destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but he also was the tool to punish the Egyptians. So Hashem told Nebuchadnezzar, now Egypt was pretty safe. It was all the way down in Africa. And in those days, especially, if you had to undertake a big mission to travel down to Africa, that was a big deal. And you had to have provisions, and you had to, it was a big journey, and it was like a mishigas. Like, why would an army want to go down to Africa? You know, what's there for them? Like, everybody thought there was, like, gold hidden, you know, mysterious gold or certain, it was exotic. So they always thought they'd get to Egypt and discover something. But Hashem told Nebuchadnezzar, here it calls it Nebuchadrezzar. Sometimes he was given a nickname because he wasn't such a good person. He said to him, Melech Bavo, Lahakos es Eretz Mitzrayim. It's time for you to go and punish Egypt. It's the same word, Haka, is the same word as the Makos. Give them some wax. So the message that Hashem was giving to Jeremiah was to tell the people. Now, in Israel today, if you're ever American, they love Americans. They think Americans are the most cool. That's every Israeli wants to be an American, you know, like the West, you know, wealthy. And Israel's a small country. And when you have these big, large, wealthy countries around it, the nature is that people want to imitate those big, large, wealthy countries because it looks like they got lots of stuff. You know, it looks like they're it. So Egypt in those days was the big, large, wealthy country. It was the big, and a lot of Jews were imitating the Egyptians. That was the country to, that was the nation to imitate. That where they worshipped Egyptian gods. So it says like this, verse 14, Hagidim Mitzrayim. Hashem wanted to give them a warning. So he says, go tell them down in Egypt. Veshmiel Ben-Migdol, you should tell them in these cities. Today, they have excavations in these cities. You can go and they have the archaeologists take you there, and they have pyramids, and they have, you could see the, some of them are, I think one of them they said was Memphis. I don't, you know, apparently that's the name of a city in ancient Egypt, was Memphis. I don't know if it's currently a city or not, but I always thought Memphis was in Tennessee till I saw that. So he said, go tell him Egypt and make it known in Migdol, Vishmina Benof, Ubatafu, go tell him over there. They said, be ready, because the sword is coming. Verse 15, Madua Niska Fabirayach. Egypt was a very strong and mighty empire. And for many centuries, they were the power to be afraid of. They, it was really the in ancient times, Egypt was really it. So they never were afraid of what they did, especially to the Jewish people and to others, because they relied on their strength. So Hashem says, why is it? What happened to their strength? We're going to see that they had these mighty warriors that they counted on, and then in the battle, it didn't help them. Other people say this word Abirecha, which they call the mighty ones, let's see, he translates that as the mighty ones. Abir can mean mighty. But there's also an idea that every nation has like an angel that represents that nation. And as long as that nation does what they're supposed to, so it's in the mazel, it's in the plan that the nation will be successful in their battles, in their economy. But once, at a certain point, when a nation loses its moral ground, it loses its position, so their angel, so to speak, gets thrown away or gets pushed down, and then it's just a matter of time until the country crumbles. And if you look at, like, there were ancient nations, you had the Greeks and the Romans, and these were mighty empires, and then they crumble. It's just amazing, like, in our time, you had the Soviet Union, you know, there was a big, strong empire, and then it just, you know, in a short amount, it just crumbled, like, it just fell apart, the Iron Curtain fell apart. You remember, it was East Germany and West Germany, and they said, the articles that were written in the Times said maybe 20, 30 years from now, they'll talk about bringing them together. And almost overnight, it was a mistake that caused the wall to come tumbling down, and, you know, with which is a story by itself. But really, at some point, Hashem causes a nation to crumble. He throws their angel down. He throws their it's interesting now. You sometimes hear that that people feel America might be in for a decline. You know, that we've been a superpower for a certain amount of time, and it's a privilege, but it comes with a. If we're worthy of it, then it won't happen. But if we've lost, if we're not worthy of it, a superpower is a responsibility. And if you're not worthy of it, and so Egypt was this superpower. It was the big powerhouse on the top of Africa. So Hashem says over here, where is your might? Where is your power? Lo amad ki Hashem hidafu. Hashem is pushing you away. Verse 15. Harba kosho. What happened is that people tripped. A lot of people, they tripped, they stumbled, they blew it. And one of the big problems that often happens is that there's infighting. One person fights against another. That's almost always, if you look at Rome, they were always like assassinating each other. You know, Brutus was assassinating Caesar, and once that starts happening, so the same thing happened here in Egypt. They're fighting against each other. So Paro, his strategy always, a very interesting strategy was, he would send his army out so that the war wouldn't take place in their country. See, if you're always fighting, it's much better to be fighting in other countries. Some people say that's what Russia is doing in the Middle East. They'd rather fight the Muslims over there than fight them in their own country. Because once the wars comes to your country, they devastate a country. And so Egypt always sent their army up north and sent it to other places. And now the army's being called home. Now it says because of the sword of the dove. What's the dove doing over here? So some people say that that was the Persian mascot. Very difficult to know what was on their flag, what was on the, you know, if they had the dove, what was the that expression, the sword of the dove. Let's see. Does he translate that?
Overpowering.
Cherub Hayona. I don't know why. Yona is a dove. I don't know which word is the overpowering. Unless he means that the sword is like a, it's like swift like a bird, maybe? Is a dove a quick bird? I don't know that. I'm on verse 16. Karusham Paro. Now, the country itself was led by a Paro, was led by a leader who was like a king god. His name was, all their gods, were their leaders were called Paros. Melech Mitzrayim, Shon Hever Moed. He's got an appointment. His time is up. Now, this is interesting. The Paro, in the other places, he's called Paro Necho, Paro the Lame. The story was that he sacked Israel. He came with his armies up through Israel. Israel was the land bridge to Europe, and so he came through Israel. And he took the treasures from Israel down to Egypt. And one of the most famous treasures was the throne of King Solomon. Solomon was a very wealthy, very brilliant king. And a legend has it that he designed a throne without electricity, but it had movable parts. It was like it had all kinds of animals and wheels. And we have descriptions of it, and gold and silver and rubies. And these, when he would sit on the throne, like a lion would come out and roar, and, you know, here comes the king, and all kinds of things. It was all, you know, for those days, it was like a wonder. Nobody, when he attacked the Jewish people and he sacked the city, he was very excited that he wanted this throne for himself. So he disassembled Solomon's throne and brought it to Egypt. And Egypt had lots of scientists and people, and they put it together. And he was all excited. He was going to sit on the throne. And then the lion came out, you know, when he sat on the throne, you know, here's the king, and play the music. And something fell on him, on his leg. And that was it. He never walked right after that. And he decided that he was not going to sit on King Solomon's throne. That was not meant to be. So his nickname was Paro the Lame. From that time, he had a certain arrogance that he visited himself. He was going to take King Solomon's throne, so to speak. So his time had been up. 18. Chai ani nu Hashem. Hashem swears. Whenever it says that Hashem swears, now Hashem doesn't need to swear. Who does he swear to? But there's the idea that Hashem is merciful, and many times he makes a decree to see if we'll react. And if we change the reality, the decree will be nullified. So let's say Hashem said, for example, he sent Yonah to announce to Nineveh that he was going to destroy the city. But part of that message was, if you fix the problems, I'm not going to destroy it. And so the people repented. That's the Yom Kippur story, that if the people change their ways, Hashem's not going to destroy the city. So here also, maybe Egypt, this was a warning, and if Egypt will just get their act straight, they'll say they're sorry, they'll be nice, then everything will be fine. So here Hashem says, no, that's not going to happen. This is not just a warning so that you should do teshuvah. Hashem is swearing this is going to happen. And basically he tells them, pack your bags. You're going to go into exile. And if you're going to go into exile, you better pack your bags, you better be ready. So this was not a message like, you know, let's just fix a few things and then destiny will change. No, Hashem says, Chai ani, by my life, and Hashem lives forever. Hashem spoke, and he has this word, Svakos, which means Hashem is the king of the multitudes. And that means that Paro thought he had a lot of soldiers, a lot of chariots. It doesn't compete with the armies at Hashem's disposal. Whenever we think of Hashem as being, you know, the tremendous armies of angels and legions, we always use this word. Now, because we don't try to pronounce Hashem's name, So we put the K in there, we call it Tzvakos, but it's really, it doesn't look like that. It looks like Tzva and then Os, but that's just a rabbinic thing to say Tzvakos, to try not to say Hashem's name in vain. But it's really nice, it's pronounced the way, in Hebrew, the modern word for army is that same word, Tzva is an army. But when you hear that with Hashem's name, it means that we're trying to talk about the fact that Hashem is very mighty and has multitudes of people. And he says the following, Kitabar Bahar Mekarmo Bayam Yavo. And just like these two mountains, they're not going anywhere. So too, this is going to come true. In other words, it's as firm as a mountain, so to speak, that this is going to happen. There's a question why he mentions these two mountains. What was unique about them? Some people say that when Hashem wanted to give the Torah, he chose Mount Sinai because it was a humble mountain. It wasn't the biggest. It wasn't the tallest. And part of that message is Hashem likes people that are humble. In other words, other societies, they value the biggest, the fastest, the widest. Our society, we like people that are just quiet, unassuming. To us, those people are holy. Those are the great. Those are the heroes. The heroes are not the fancy, you know. It's the simple, you know. That's the Mount Sinai people. Those are the ones that Hashem wants His Torah. We don't need the tallest. We don't need the biggest. We don't need the one that makes the most noise. And so, Paro, Egyptian society was not about that. It was about being fancy and tall. And so Hashem said, because of the Jewish people, that the Torah was not given on either of those mountains. It's a different culture and a different society. It's interesting one thing they did do was that they turned their dead into mummies, like to last forever, and they built these really big buildings, the pyramids. And there must have been something in their society that drove them to do that. I mean, I think it took thousands of workers and many, many years, and it was like a... there was something that there's something about their society that they would have created these things. There was something about the Paros that they thought they would live forever, or that that they enslaved people. They specialized in making slaves. You could only build a pyramid with slaves. Like, who's going to work on something for to bury people for years and years and years with big stones and big? It was a big undertaking. I don't know the full lesson of what's in the pyramids, but it's interesting that from the ancients, those are the few buildings that are around. You go to the land of Israel, there are no ancient buildings. The Jews, they didn't build, you know, they weren't big builders. You know, there wasn't, that wasn't how we built our children. We built our way of life. We didn't put it into buildings. You know, you'll find very few ancient buildings in the land of Israel that the Romans were into building. They did their baths and their roads. But that wasn't, you go to Israel, you're not going to see old buildings. I mean, you can dig them up, but there are very few, you know. We have a house of Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash, but okay, verse 19. So we said that this was not a message that they could fix. Basically, he was saying, pack your bags. And that's what he tells them over here. 19, he says, you guys, you're going on a journey. You're going to be, when a nation was conquered, there are two ways. You can conquer it and start levying taxes, or you make the people... You make the people leave and you send them away as slaves to other nations. So the message over here is you got to pack your bags, take the vessels of, if you're going to be, I was reading that the biography of Mendelovich, Yosef Mendelovich, who was a Russian Jew who was sent to the Gulag because he wanted to go to Israel. And he spent 12 years there. And before he went, they knew like which things to pack in your bags. Like they had like certain worn clothes and certain things that prisoners need. There were certain there's so many Jews and so many people would be sent to prison. They had there's a how-to guide what to take when you go to prison. You know, so here also like he's telling Egypt, you guys better get ready. The kind of stuff you're going to need. You know, traveling whatever it is, clay gola, things that people that are travelers are going to take. You better get it ready. Now you people are not used to that. You know, Jews are used to moving. You know, that's been our history. We haven't stayed in one city for very long. We haven't, we've been there. We've been to Spain. We've been to Germany. We've been to Russia. We've been to Poland. We've been to France. You name it. We've been there. So we're used to picking up and moving, but the Egyptians had been in the same country for centuries. So Hashem says, you guys better pack your bags, and you better get ready to move. Yosheb is by you've been the daughter of Egypt, you've been there, kinof l'shamatiya, because your cities are going to be wiped out, nitzim ein yoshev, and they're going to be desolate. Verse 20. Now, Egypt was a very wealthy country, and it was hard to believe that something would happen with it. And he describes it like a fat cow. It's interesting, today we talk about a fat cow. It's not a compliment to be a fat cow. Egla yafa, like a nice... sometimes you have a cow that has that looks nice and full. Basically, they fatten it up so that you'll have lots of meat. You don't want a skinny cow. The meat doesn't taste so good. You put a lot of fat on it. So Egypt was like a fat cow. They were bragging about all their wealth. This was just going to be booty for the Assyrians. Egla yafa... Pia Mitzrayim, Keretz Misafon Bo. It's going to come from the north. You're going to have the Assyrians are going to come and forget it. Gamske Reha Bekirba. And the Egyptians, not only did they have their own armies, they used to hire armies. You could hire armies to defend yourself. Remember the British in the Revolutionary War? They used to hire the Prussians, right?
What?
The Hessians. That's right. The Hessians. I remember the George Washington and fighting the... So too, Egypt had plenty of that. Ancient times, like, you know, you didn't want to send your children to go to battle. You just hired, you know, you could hire armies. And sometimes, they would switch sides depending on who paid them the most money. And they'd go to one side, they'd go to the other. Have other people fight. It was very convenient, you know. So Egypt, Hashem was saying that you think you're relying that you have all this wealth and you can hire these armies. Kigam Hema Hifnu Nasser. I guess what they thought was that if they're threatened, they could always hire an army to protect them because they had the gold reserves. You know, if you have the money reserves, you figure, well, we have nothing to worry about. There's all these armies for hire. We'll just offer money and they'll come defend us. So Hashem says, no, it's not going to work. Lo'am de kiyom edimba, because it works for a certain amount of time, but at the time when the country, it's been decided that their sins are so great, their time will come. Es pekudasim. And in the Parsha also, this is what was going on, which was Egypt was the master of the slaves. They had all these slaves, and people said, why would you... Nobody... Slaves never get freed. No people had ever gotten their freedom from Egypt. And they just couldn't believe that it wouldn't go on like that forever. 22. Kola kanachash yelech. Their voice will be like a snake. I don't know what kind of sound a snake makes. Hisses, maybe? It's going to hiss? Ki b'chal yechu b'kardamus bo. Maybe you hiss when you're afraid. I'm not sure of the metaphor of the... their voice will travel. He says travel like a snake. But I don't think a snake's voice travels. I don't know. It's so interesting.
When it's a rattlesnake, that's how they know it's coming.
You can hear it from afar. But we're saying that the victim's voice, the Egyptian's voice, is like a snake. We're not. Sometimes we're not in touch with nature in the same way they were to know exactly what the metaphor is. Kola kanacha shela. I wonder if you can hear a snake like from a far distance or something. Like, I just wouldn't want to know. Egypt was a snake. Is always. We talked about this before, that most creatures, when they harm another creature, it's because they need to eat or they feel attacked. Snakes will attack other creatures even if they don't plan on eating them. So if somebody harms others for no reason, they're called a snake. And so Egypt was like that. When Israel was destroyed, a lot of Jews went down to Egypt because it looked like they would be hospitable. And again, in ancient times, we also went down to Egypt during the famine. That's where Yaakov and his sons went. But Egypt has this tradition. You think they're being nice, and they take you in. And then what happens? They turn you into slaves. Then they take advantage of you. And so it's like there's a pattern here that they seem to be nice, and they seem to be friendly, but they're self-serving. They're like a snake. The Jews went down to Egypt. Now, Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu, didn't want to go to Egypt. He knew, because Hashem told him what was going to happen there. But it's funny, the Jews thought they'd be safe in Egypt. because Egypt was the only country that had not been conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, and it was the other superpower, and they were afraid of, you know, they were afraid of him and what he had done to the Jews, so they figured, we'll go to Egypt and we'll be safe. And now Hashem is telling you that he's going to come down to Egypt and he's going to destroy Egypt as well. The armies are going to come through. Now, it's interesting. They're described like woodchoppers come and they knock down the trees. I guess if you wanted to cut down a forest, there's an imagery that when you cut down a, you know, like a tree in full bloom, like to cut it down is like a, it's almost like a person's against nature or they're, so Egypt was going to be like cut down. It's like a forest about to be cut down. That's the expression over here. Again, I don't know that sometimes when they besieged a city, they cut down all the vegetation around the city so that the they would run out of food. But it's describing the armies coming with hatchets and chopping down the trees.
For battering rams.
Yeah, I know the Romans did that.
They did
I guess
that. I don't know if they do that in Egypt.
Uh-huh. So. They cut the trees down or. Okay, but it was a beautiful country, and it was going to be cut down. 23. Karsu yarasu nu mashem. Your forest is cut down. Ki lo yakoker, because the Egypt had many forests and many trees. Ki rabu ka'arba. They had as many as there were locusts. And that's also in the parsha about the grasshoppers or the locusts. The Egypt had unlimited supply. Marva Elaham Mispra. Havishu Bas Mitzrayim. The Egypt, you're going to be humiliated. You're finally going to lose. Nitna Biyadam Safun. You're going to be given over to the northern people. So that's the prediction given to Egypt. Verse 25. Oh, Hashem Svakos Elokei Yisrael. And Hashem says, why was this happening? This was happening because of the God of Israel. He's our personal God. Hinini poked el amon mono va'al paro va'al mitzrayim. The people had sinned and they were bad people and there was a certain amount of patience, but now their time came. And that's really what had happened. And Hashem said that, you know, one of the things we see from the Parsha is that Paro was given a warning. You know, when Moshe had come and said, let my people go, he would have said, oh, okay. It wouldn't have been any trouble, right? He was warned, and then he had a plague, and it got worse and worse and worse, and it's incredible that he just doesn't get the message. He just doesn't, no matter how big the miracle, Paro just doesn't get it. So here Hashem says that also that Egypt was going to be punished, and Paro was going to be punished, Val Eloha, and its gods. They worship the gods of Egypt, Bamalakha, their kings, Valparo, Valabotkinbo, and those that relied on him. Some people say this refers to the Jews that had gone down to Egypt. Many the Jewish community in Egypt would be destroyed as well. Egypt has always had a Jewish community, and it's been destroyed many times. It's interesting. There's a debate whether Jews are allowed to go to Egypt. The Torah says we are not supposed to go back there. Because we've been there already, we had enough. So some people feel that was just that generation. In other words, the generation that left Egypt wasn't supposed to go back. But if you want to go back and visit, it's not a problem. Other people feel you just don't go to Egypt.
The Torah is eternal.
Well, when the Torah said it, did it mean it just for that generation, or did it mean it for all generations? There's a debate.
Whatever Torah says, is it just for that generation, or is it for us now?
Certain things are meant for a specific time, and certain things are clearly for all times, right? And so the question was, that specific command, was it given to them because they were there? Or legend has it that the Rambam went down to Egypt because he didn't have anywhere else to go, but he used to say that he felt he was committing a sin by living in Egypt, because he really didn't want to go there. He had no choice, but that was the only place to go. Some places, the Jews weren't welcome in other places, so they had to go there. Verse 26, they used to have a Pesach tour, which was go to Egypt for Passover. I thought it was get out of Egypt for Passover. But Nesatim, I'm going to give those Egyptians biyad mevakshe nafshim. I'm going to give them over to their enemies. And their enemies, they don't just want to be friendly with them. They're out to kill them. There's different kind of enemies. Sometimes enemies, they want slaves. They want this. No. The enemies, they're going to be Biyad Nebuchadrezzar, Melech Bavo, the Babylonian king, Biyad Avodav. He's got lots of servants. And after that, Tishkon Kimei Kedem, Nu Mashem. So basically, this would be temporary. In other words, Egypt would be sent into exile for many years, and the country would be devastated. But then many years later, they would come back. So that's like kind of the... But Egypt would never again be a great country. That's really interesting. In ancient times, they were it. They were the country to imitate. They were the country of wealth, the country of power, and... But now the Haftorah is going to make a segue, is going to switch to the real... Yirmiyahu was a Jewish prophet. And again, the Jews always wanted to impress the Gentiles. Egypt was always the country that held a... it was romantic to us. There was something about Egypt. And when Israel was in danger, many Jews went to live in Egypt. So he's telling you, you should know that the war is going to come to Egypt. Egypt's not going to be a safe place. Don't put your hope in Egypt. That's kind of the message. Throughout the Torah, even after we were enslaved there, we got our freedom, Jews still wanted to go back to Egypt. It's just a funny thing. Like they wanted to, there was something about Egypt. There was certainly a lure to that culture. So the message was that, Egypt is going to be punished for their attitude and the way they've done things. They were happy that we had before that they were an ally and they were supposed to help us defeat our enemies. And instead, they left us. They let Israel be destroyed, and now would come their time. Just as an aside, there's something we read about on Tisha B'Av that we had one. There was a mix of various leaders towards the end of the Jewish Commonwealth, and sometimes we had very bad leaders, and that was why the country went into a downward spiral. Again, it's such as today we have elections that last years. It's just incredible. Like when we grew up, you had, a few weeks before the election, now it's like, it's such a big thing that for years, every day on the news, who's going to be the next leader? And it's just amazing how it's taken on and it's entertainment too, people put on shows and they watch and the Egyptians we're going to be finished with, and we shouldn't put our hopes into the Egyptians, and that was the message to Egypt and to Paro. But now we turn to the Jewish people. Now we also were kicked out of. Oh, we had different leaders. Some were better leaders, and some were less not such good leaders. The last great leader of the Jewish people was Yoshiyahu. He was a great great grandson of King David. And he was the one that could have changed everything. If he almost became the Mashiach. And what happened was that Egypt, this Paro, wanted to send his army through Israel to threaten some countries up in the north, to threaten the Assyrians. As again, we mentioned that he liked to have his armies fight far off. Now, in ancient times, you never wanted an army to travel through your country. Because when you have thousands of violent young men traveling through your country, they would seize booty and they would harm the women and they would... it was just not something that any secure country would want to let happen, to have an army travel through. So Yoshiyahu said that Egypt would not be given permission to travel through. Now, he thought that Hashem would protect them, but he was such a righteous person that he thought that everybody else was righteous, and he was sure that Hashem would help us and Hashem would protect us, but he misjudged things. We weren't worthy of miracles, and he should have let the Egyptian army go through. You have to sometimes be practical. You can't rely on miracles. And so he came out with his army to stop the Egyptians from coming through. And the Egyptians, they did some reconnaissance, and they found out what the Jewish king looked like. And they had their archers shoot at him. And they knew exactly where he was stationed, and he had like, you know, dozens of arrows that went through his body. And as he was dying, he said, you know, Hashem is the righteous one. Apparently he didn't listen to the prophets who would have told him that he should let the Egyptians go through. But that's in the Kinos and the Tisha B'Av story. But that this is the Egypt of that time that killed our last great king, Yoshiyahu, because they wanted to let their army just go, you know, go through our backyard, and we didn't want to let them. But it was a pretty bad king. We shouldn't feel bad for Egypt. They deserved what they were going to get. But now we go back to the Jewish people, and when you hear that Egypt will be displaced, but then it'll go back, so you wonder, you know, it's been a long time since we've been back. When are we going to come back? And so, therefore, now Hashem turns to the Jewish people in verse 27. Va'ata, and now, Al tira avdi Yaakov. You, Yaakov, who are my servant, you're not just Egypt, you're not just anybody, you're my servant. You are the one that does what Hashem wants in the world. One thing that people sometimes aren't aware of, it's because of the movie of the Ten Commandments. It said Moses went down to Egypt and he said, let my people go. But that's a pause in the middle of a sentence. He didn't say, let my people go. He said, let them go and serve me. Shalach es ami va'avduni. Let my people go and serve me. In other words, Moses wasn't freeing slaves. He was saying that they shouldn't be down here serving you, Paro. They have a job to do. They are to be people of God. They are to do good things. You can't let them just be here and build the pyramids. Let them go. Freedom is a good thing when it's used in good ways. It wasn't just free them because you have to be free. It's because they have free because they have important things to do. They don't want to serve you. You're not a god, Paro. They want to serve the real God. So over here, the Jewish people is described as an Eved, a servant of God. So he says, don't be afraid, my servant Jacob. The Jewish people, we're loyal to Hashem. We do Hashem's bidding. But I'll take us. And there's two kinds of fear. Sometimes people have like a strong fear, like a real fear. And sometimes there's like in the back of their minds, they're just worried. So Hashem says, you don't have to have either. Don't have big fear, don't have little fear. Right? There's what people are, you know, really worried about, and then there's just the nagging fear. Hashem says, you don't have to have either of them. And he describes the Jewish people as Yaakov, the Jewish people that are struggling, and Israel, the Jewish people that is conquered. Ki hini moshiach mirochok. He says, I'm going to save you. Now, some of us feel distanced. We feel distanced from Hashem. We're far away. We're far away from Judaism. We're far away from Israel. So Hashem said, that's no problem. I'm gonna bring you back from wherever you are. And not only you say, well, what about my kids? Sometimes the kids don't do what we want them to do. Hashem says, I'm going to get them too. Vesareich, I'm going to get them Eretz Shivyum, from wherever they're held captive. Now, sometimes people are held captive in a physical way, and sometimes they're captive to other things. There are other things keeping them there. So Hashem says, don't worry about all that. Veshav Yaakov v'sheket v'shanan, you're going to come back, and you're going to come back to peace. Sheket is the same word as sheket, you know, sheket bevakasha, right? They'll be quiet and peaceful, and ein machrid, and no more fear. Verse 28, it's so interesting, like it has to repeat itself, because sometimes you tell people not to be afraid, and they're still afraid. And so he says, no, v'ata altir, don't be afraid. There's a song about this, Avdi Yaakov, by the way. After Shabbos, people sing it. Because after Shabbos, you go back to work. And work is scary. It's, you know, you got to go back to, it's like going back to the rat race. You know, Shabbos, you sit, and you eat, and you have family, and what's not to like? Everything is good. And then all of a sudden, Shabbos is over, and it's back to work, you know, back to problems, back to the whatever things you got to do. So one of the songs is, don't be afraid, my servant Jacob. Like, you know, Hashem says that, you know, there are a lot of things that people worry about. Where's the next dollar going to come from? What's going to be with the children? What's going to be with the Gentiles? Hashem says, my servant Jacob, don't worry. And he repeats himself. Ata 28. Ata, and now. Altira, don't be afraid. Avdi Yaakov, num Hashem, ki itcha ani. Because you know why? I'm with you. I'm there. Hashem says, I'm going to be there for you. Ki esakala ba kola goyim ashir shama. And those nations, whether it was the Nazis, whether it was the Romans, whether it was whatever nations that have tried to harm you, they're going to be wiped out. Va'osach lo esachal, but you will never be wiped out. Va'yisitircha lemishpat. But there will be justice. There will be the process of anaka lo yanaka. But Hashem says, but you won't be destroyed. So the galus, there are, you know, there are sad things that happen. There are judgments. But Hashem says it's not going to be like Egypt. I'm going to bring you back, no matter how far you are, and you'll never be destroyed. So it's interesting. Like it doesn't say there won't be holocausts. It doesn't say there won't be pogroms, but it says that Hashem says, I'll never let them wipe you out. And I'm going to bring you back from afar. And but Hashem says, don't be afraid because I'm with you. And so that's a message of hope.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.